Chapter 2. Despite the circumstances of their first meeting, Meng Yao mostly appreciated Ah Jue for his quick mind and fearlessness. And yes, occasionally for his towering height that made grabbing books from high places infinitely easier, rather than his muscles, however impressive they were. In fact, after the first few weeks, he had very nearly forgotten that Ah Jue was a guard of the inner hall. The assassination attempt put an end to that oversight. It wasn't that Meng Yao hadn't anticipated such an attempt, nor that he hadn't taken precautions. He was careful to take his meals in the communal kitchen at unexpected hours, and tested even the snacks he kept with him before consuming them, and naturally avoided any unsupervised hallways or attempts to lure him outside. But he had underestimated the enmity that greeted his appointment. He had not thought they would launch a direct attack. The perpetrators entered his office as petitioners, posing as clerks for an influential merchant, and launched the attack just as they were settling into the rhythm of negotiations. They were hoping to catch him distracted, which they did, but Meng Yao had always had good instincts. He realized what was happening the first moment they moved. He was out of his chair and reaching for the flexible sword he stored around his waist almost at once, already calculating how many injuries he could incur and still be able to fight back enough to preserve his life. He just needed to survive until the guards came in, unless they'd somehow gotten rid of those, in which case he needed to run. The calculations proved unnecessary. By the time Meng Yao's hand reached the hilt of his blade, Ah Jue was already in front of him, catching one assassin in the chest with a vicious palm strike and knocking him into the path of another, turning fluidly to slam an elbow into a third. He didn't even draw the saber that hung low at his waist, just knocked aside the assassin's swords and daggers with his bare hands, and then beat them with his fists and feet. Meng Yao stood there for a moment, blinking. And by the time even his quick-moving mind caught up with everything, the assassins were all unconscious or paralyzed. The merchant was on his knees, begging for mercy and swearing his ignorance. And Ah Jue was standing there, frowning slightly at one of the still-twitching assassins, like he was considering going in for more. "Why didn't you draw your saber?" Meng Yao asked, both because he was curious and because it was a better reaction than saying, "I forgot you could do that," or "I thought I'd be facing them all on my own again," or even worse, "Thanks."
"I thought you'd want them alive to question them,"
Ah Jue said, blinking at him. He had the same expression of good-natured puzzlement as he did any time Meng Yao corrected him, whether as to his calculation of accounting errors or underestimating the malice inherent in mankind, which remained a subject of recurrent disagreement.
"Was I wrong?"
"Not at all," Meng Yao said, and felt once again the thrill of power when Ah Jue nodded and called for other guards to enter and remove the bodies. Though he crouched by each one first to check them over for any suicide pills or arrays that might interfere with an interrogation. His professional detachment and efficient resolution of events was truly suitable for a guard of the inner hall, the finest of Wen Rohan's soldiers. There could be no complaints. There was something truly delightful about having a powerful man at your beck and call, Meng Yao reflected, and wondered briefly if Ah Jue had been sent his way deliberately as a plant to influence his confidence. It seemed unlikely, given the random nature of their meeting, and certainly Ah Jue didn't fit any of Meng Yao's known pre-existing preferences, other than in terms of bed partners. And yet he grew suspicious, if only because Ah Jue suited him so very well. Just right in every way. Meng Yao spent the next 3 days conducting a series of covert tests to see if any information was being leaked from his office through Ah Jue. But there was nothing. Ultimately, he was forced to conclude that Ah Jue might actually just be like that. Straightforward and blunt, fearless in both speech and action, decisive and capable, and yet willing to take orders from Meng Yao, never judging him for his birth, but respecting him for his abilities. "Good help," he reminded his suddenly overactive libido. "Hard to find. Don't ruin a good thing." It was hard to remember, though. Achue was just the sort of man Meng Yao liked when he went for men. Handsome and powerfully built. Well-born or rich or both. Stern and unyielding in demeanor. The sort of man for whom life generally went the way they wanted. The sort that could easily get a girl. Even one of good breeding and appropriate lineage. Merely by snapping his fingers. The type of man that might tempt even a practiced whore. Meng Yao liked to break those types of men. It was a trait he shared with Wen Rohan, and one of the ways he had managed to get the Emperor's attention. That first job he had taken had been in the Fire Palace, the Emperor's torture chambers, and he had worked out a considerable portion of his anger and anxiety through the torment of his enemies, defined liberally as anyone who insulted his mother. He'd matured since then, growing calmer, but he still liked to put proud men on their knees and make them service him, to rub their faces in the fact that he was the one with the power, to make them crawl and plead and cry for him. Though he supposed for someone like Achue, he wouldn't need to break him, really. It'd be enough to see him bend. Willingly for him. And yet, if Meng Yao did that, wouldn't Achue start to flinch from him and turn away from him, seek to preserve his injured pride by fleeing Meng Yao's presence the way so many others before him had? It would make working together much more annoying, and Achue was perfect the way he was. Almost irritatingly so. If only Achue were more inclined to make errors, Meng Yao would feel freer to take advantage of him. "Have you never thought less of me because of my parentage?" Meng Yao asked one evening, apropos of nothing, when Achue was already exhausted and more than a little wild-eyed from having to review every single one of the reports on wheat yields in their northern provinces as part of Meng Yao's random audit of the files.
"I mean, Jingguangshan's a waste of space, but you're nothing like him, so not after the beginning,"
Achue said automatically, then scowled at Meng Yao when he started laughing.
"What? Give me a break. I didn't know you then. How was I to guess that you'd actually be competent? Or not awful?"
"I was," Meng Yao said with dignity, even if his lips insisted on twitching. "Referring to my mother."
"But you hate it when people talk about your mother,"
Achue said blankly, then shook his head and pinched the bridge of his nose.
"I'm sorry, is this some kind of mind game? If so, can it wait until tomorrow? I'm going to dream in wheat prices."
"It can wait until tomorrow," Meng Yao agreed, pretending to be solemn. He wasn't sure if he was more amused at Ajue's ridiculous perspective on things, or the fact that he seemed to think Meng Yao was not awful simply because he'd indulged him a few times when he was being especially insistent on doing things the soft-hearted way.
"You're making fun of me again," Ajue grumbled. "I don't know why, but you are. Fuck you."
The next day, Meng Yao asked Achue if he'd ever been to a whorehouse.
"Yes, while on campaign,"
Achue said, blinking rapidly, as if he were trying to hide something, or more likely not think of something. Either he'd had a bad experience, or he thought Meng Yao was going to cut off his balls for admitting it. Which he wouldn't, of course. There was nothing wrong with a better sort of customer. And Meng Yao felt certain that Achue would have been that sort. Could imagine him sitting in the corner with a jar of wine and a blush until he was coaxed upstairs, and then paying too much for the privilege after. But it was cute that Ajue was worried about such things. Meng Yao put a friendly hand on Ajue's shoulder. The man flinched, briefly, but quickly mastered himself, just as he did any time someone touched him, and said in his best sugar-sweet sympathetic tone that he hadn't used on anyone in ages. Did she touch you in a bad place?
The honored viceroy can go fuck himself any time he damn well pleases,
Ajue said, and he had no idea how much Meng Yao would like to ask him if he'd prefer to do the honors himself. Do you know any other curses, or is it just variations on the term fuck? He asked instead, thinking, good help, good help, good help. I know at least 36 involving farm animals instead, if you'd like to learn. Ajue's laugh was in no way like a braying donkey, no matter what Meng Yao pretended to insist.
Have you considered the benefits of a regular routine of physical exercise?
Ajue asked. Meng Yao glared at him.
I'm just saying, Ajue said. It would make your life easier.
Shut up and get me down from up here, Meng Yao hissed. Ajue had taken care of the vicious, snarling creatures that had somehow gotten loose. An obvious follow-up assassination attempt, now that the poisoning he thought he'd identified in a late-night dessert had been demonstrably unsuccessful. Even if Ajue had insisted that they were just sweet little puppies, and Meng Yao was overreacting.
I'd be happy to help train you if you'd like.
I'm far too busy, Meng Yao said, with what little shreds of dignity he still possessed. I do 3 times as much work as you do. I don't have capacity to go running off to go wave a stick in the air multiple times a day, unlike some people. Ajue grinned at him, utterly unmoved, and Meng Yao huffed, rolling his eyes at him. If I agree, he said, with no intention whatsoever of agreeing, will you finally show me your saber? If there was innuendo in there, well, he was only one man after all.
Perhaps one day, Ajue said. It's not a privilege I give to everyone.
Meng Yao tried to parse whether that was flirting. He couldn't quite tell. Well, your saber is very large, he said, probing. Maybe you should take it out more often.
When I take out my saber, someone dies,
Ajue said, and probably not flirting then.
I wouldn't want to accidentally skewer you.
Possibly very strange flirting? Meng Yao wouldn't put it past Ajue. Yes, well, he said, straightening his robes and settling back into professional mode. You have fun with your exercise, but leave me out of it. Ajue escorted him back to his office first, conscientious as always. Once he was done, Meng Yao rang a certain bell and summoned Cici, whose freedom was probably the best investment he'd ever made. She'd merged into the palace staff without leaving so much as a trace behind, acting as though the other girls were her sisters and she'd been there forever, and she was more than willing to report on everything she learned. Also, she'd retained enough of her looks that everyone thought that Meng Yao only summoned her for sex, making Ajue's occasional disappearances for training purposes the perfect time for Meng Yao to meet with her without suspicion. He'd given up most of his paranoia surrounding Ajue, but that was no reason to share all of his tricks. Besides, he wasn't sure he actually wanted Ajue and Cici to meet. When you're done fucking him, can you share? Cici asked, after she put down the tray of snacks, buns, and a pot of tea, all of which she sampled before his eyes in the name of sharing food. Man like that deserves to be common property. I'm not whoring him out, Meng Yao said, a warning in his tone, and Cici sighed dramatically. Tell me you're at least having a good time with all those muscles, she said. Someone ought to be. Meng Yao rolled his eyes. Where's the trouble coming from this time? He asked, deciding to elide the issue entirely. I keep hearing whispers and people look nervous, the way they do before some sort of trouble. But neither the gentry nor merchant class seems to have produced anything out of the ordinary. And I can't imagine it's the farmers again after last time. You're looking out. You should be looking in, she said. The Emperor's court? That could be a serious problem. Any political turmoil that happened within the Nightless City could have ramifications well beyond it. His harem, Cici said, her face alight with the pleasure of gossip. Words come back from the south. Turns out that the Emperor took one of the Imperial consorts with him for his trip. Even Meng Yao's eyebrows raised. And with the Empress in seclusion, well. It wasn't as though the Empress had a strong maternal family as a backing. No one even knew what her surname was. But she'd been there for years and years, practically part of the decor. Replacing her with one of the consorts would be a change. The Nightless City hated change. Could you ask to see her? Cici asked. Just proof of life? I could, Meng Yao said, because technically he had authority over everyone. But I won't. Why would I invite trouble for myself? I'd have to explain to the Emperor why I interfered with his harem. Good point, Cici said, although she looked disappointed. Which consort? The rumor says Ah Song, she said. The one that likes to carry scholarly fans. Ah Song? Really? I know, we all thought that the Emperor didn't even like Ah Song. Everyone agrees that Ah Song never got any Imperial visits before this. The Emperor never spent a night in Ah Song's rooms, never even shared a meal, nothing. But why else would he take Ah Song with him on a months-long journey? Why, indeed? The Emperor remained as unfathomable as ever. Meng Yao wondered briefly if Wen Rohan really had murdered the Empress in her seclusion, faking her presence with a note. Still, it seemed implausible. Why would he bother? I heard a rumor once, he said instead, about Ah Song. Like all good spies and shit-stirrers, Cici was immediately at full attention. She knew that Meng Yao was not inclined to gossip for the pleasure of it, the way she was, and therefore he would only volunteer information if he intended for her to spread it. Ah Song is the Empress's family, Meng Yao said, and Cici's eyes went wide. Younger sibling. Younger brother, he thought, but he didn't say anything. He didn't actually know for sure. It was hard to tell. Wen Rohan didn't lock away his wives the way some men did. On the contrary, he enjoyed bringing them out for celebrations to show them off. But the Empress was invariably veiled, swathed in silks without a hint of skin showing, always seated in her chair as if she were kneeling in penance, never moving. Meng Yao, who only saw her from a distance during the celebrations, sometimes thought she might not have legs. In daily life, she sometimes attended the Emperor's court, but always remained seated behind her veils, and sometimes even a little screen. Little more than a silhouette from which, rarely, notes emerged, but no voice ever did. Naturally, if the Empress preferred to be veiled, that meant the other wives had to at least pretend to follow her lead. And that meant veils and concealing clothing, even if some of them interpreted the concept rather loosely, with sheer veils and even sheerer clothing, meant to entice. Ah Sung fell somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, wearing a veil that revealed his eyes and clothing that allowed him flexibility of movement without too much restraint. And while he was slender and delicate, Meng Yao was moderately certain that he was indeed male. Not that it mattered. Wen Rohan had never cared much about that. Amazing, Cici breathed. So all these years, the Emperor has been refraining from touching Ah Sung out of respect for the Empress. And now the little sister wife has finally made her move. Meng Yao had said none of that, but it served him to muddle the waters a little, mostly to see who would try to clear it up. Not that it could be, as his information about their familial connection was accurate, gleaned from a careless comment by Wen Rohan himself, no less. But it interested him to know who would try regardless. Go, he said, and Cici left, all but floating, and it wasn't long before Ajue returned, all shiny with sweat and exertion, looking incredibly fuckable. You worked near the harem, right? Meng Yao asked him, mind still focused on the bubbling little scandal that he just knew would become an issue that could wreck his thus far successful regency. Do you have any connections there?
Not really, Ajue said. Most of the wives are scared of me.
Typical.
Is there something you'd like me to find out for you?
No need, Meng Yao said. He'd never met anyone less well-suited to be a spy than Ajue. But it may be an avenue of future threats, so keep it in mind.
I'm not going to let anyone from the harem harm you, Ajue said, oddly fierce. Not anyone. Don't worry.